superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is why.
Yeah! Sorry.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
We watch.
Touchdown, Georgia! Let the celebration begin!
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
This is why we love
the Rich Eisen Show. Earlier on the show, Packers tackle David Bakhtiari, Pro Football Hall of Famer Michael Irvin, Tennessee State head coach Eddie George. Coming up, 49ers linebacker Fred Warner. Plus, from HBO Max's Peacemaker, actor John Cena. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. And don't worry, I will not use this cadence for the entire hour.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I just like being, you gotta bring people in. It's a big hour. You know?
I feel you.
Last 2 hours were big too.
They're all big.
Why am I yelling? I'm just excited. It's a playoffs, man.
Let's go.
Coming up, college football season just ended. You know, my team lost to the eventual national champions in Georgia. And
you feel good about that?
I feel great about that.
Okay,
let me tell you the story about
good.
When I was an intern at the Staten Island Advance. I'm gonna completely bare my soul here. I was an intern at the Staten Island Advance.
Advance,
right. And I absolutely fell in love with a fellow intern there. This is prior to Susie, right? Susie, I didn't even know she existed in the world. This is fresh out of college. Fell in love with her. And, you know, I asked her out. I got the Heisman. Didn't work. She wound up marrying somebody else there.
From the paper?
Yeah. Tough to handle, but guess what? When you lose, you want to lose to somebody who wins the title, right?
Yeah, I think so.
You see what I'm saying? Do you pick up what I'm putting down?
I feel you, brother.
So, we lost to the champs. And you know what? They were destined. We went up against destiny. It wasn't us. It wasn't us. It was destiny. And by destiny, I mean the officials. Imagine if I came on the air and started blaming Michigan's loss on the officiating.
I was ready to blame Georgia's loss on the officiating last night.
Well, because of that fumble that wasn't.
They were just brutal, and I was getting so many tweets from people. Welcome to the ACC every week. Good Lord!
All right. At any rate, we're ready for the playoffs.
We're good.
The NFL playoffs, and so is this man. He made the All-Pro and Pro Bowl list. First team All-Pro in the National Football League last year. He has been the proverbial house of fire in the middle of this 49ers defense ever since they took him out of the third round of the draft in 2018. He is Fred Warner of the San Francisco 49ers here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Fred?
I'm great, Rich. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling in. We've never spoken before. It's a pleasure to meet you. I like the way you play the football games, sir.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
It looks like you like hitting people, Fred. Is that a true story? What do you think? Looks like to me.
That's my job. That's part of the deal. So, enjoy it.
Where do you get this mentality from?
You know, I think it's just something that's kind of been built over time. Great mentors, people around me. I think the NFL is a very physical game, and if you don't have the mindset, then you're going to get weeded out pretty quick. So, it's been something that's kind of just been ingrained in me over time, and. I love the ability to kind of just put the helmet on and be whoever you want out there.
Yeah, it seems also to me that you have this role that you relish of tone setter. You know, I know you got Nick Bosa and you got some other guys up front in front of you, but it seems like you are that's your role for the Niners defense, Fred. Would that be a proper assumption, do you think, here?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I try to be the guy to bring the energy, play in and play out for the defense. And, you know, I think it just depends on the play. It depends on the game of you know, which guy or which position group is the one setting the tone on our defense. You know, I think a lot of the time it's that defensive line, and not because they're, you know, they're just being rowdy before or after the play, but just the way that they play. You mentioned some of those guys. We have a lot of stars on that front, and I say stars in the fact that how they play, not just because of guys being well known amongst the league. You know, and I obviously those are my best friends because they make my job easy, you know, and keep me clean so I can make tackles and stuff. But yeah, I do take a large responsibility in that.
And so much made, obviously, of your defensive coordinator the last couple of years. He was at this very moment last year, a freshly minted hot coordinator candidate and head coach with the Jets now, in Robert Saleh. Walk me through D'Amico Ryans, who is a familiar name for a lot of NFL fans over the years, remembering from his playing days. But what about him as the DC right now for you and what he's done? You got a good story on that, Fred, for me?
Well, you know, I think something that's well known, you know, just I think for obviously everybody that's been around the Niners, you know, he came in as a linebacker coach the same time that I came in my first year as a linebacker for this defense. We've grown in this thing together, and you know, me and him know each other really well, and I think that's why we have such a great connection, and we work so well on throughout the week and on game days. But D'Amico is as first class, and you know, just as great as they come. Seriously, you talk about a guy who played the game at such a high level, and you know, is now coaching at the highest level, you know, finishing in the top three as a defense in his first year, you know, and I think that's just a product of the standard that he set, you know, and there was already a standard set here by Robert Saleh, you know, who I have a great amount of respect for and admiration for, but I think the fact that D'Amico is able to come in and put his own twist on it, uphold the standard, even raise the standard, is amazing, you know, and I think that's why we love the way that he coaches and he teaches, and that's why we're able to play so hard on Sunday, because we believe in everything that he preaches to us.
Let's talk about this past Sunday, Fred Warner, San Francisco 49ers linebacker. What happened in the locker room halftime? Because, oh my gosh, it looked like a totally different team came out and played that third quarter and got you back into a game that you eventually won in overtime. What happened at halftime?
Yeah, you know, I wish I could say that there was all this screaming and yelling and guys trying to rally each other, right? But, you know, it really wasn't – there wasn't much that needed to be said. You know, I told the entire team after we kind of brought it up, I said, you know, there's no tomorrow. If we don't win this game, that this is going to be our last game. And so if anybody in that moment had kind of felt like they wanted to reserve something, you know, heading into that last 30 minutes, like this is the time to kind of just let it all out. We understand that football, especially in the NFL, is all about the turnover battle. We needed to take the ball away, and the offense obviously having to keep the ball and scoring it in that first drive after the half was huge. Even that 3 points before the half was really big for us. And so I think once we kind of got that momentum going, and then the defense, we just needed to get off on third downs, you know, tighten up in the back end. And as soon as we got that interception by Emmanuel Mosley, I think that's what kind of you started to see the game kind of go our way a little bit.
Yeah, man. I mean, you got your punters kicking. You got your receivers running. I mean, it's just everybody's just doing what they have to do here to get things done. What was it like for you? Again, I know all alpha males and all football players are control freaks in a way, but you're standing there and you watch Jimmy G take the field with your offensive mates, 88 yards, 87 seconds to go, and the season's on the line. What was that? Walk me through your moments there, Fred.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it was incredible. I mean, just all the way through, honestly, and Jimmy coming up big, exactly where we needed him to. And, you know, the fact that he came back from that thumb injury, and, you know, it's not something that, I had that same exact thumb injury back in 2019 when we went to the Super Bowl, and obviously it's different when you play linebacker compared to quarterback. I couldn't imagine him trying to grip a football, because that tendon is exactly what you need to grip things. And so You know, it's just incredible stories all along the team of guys coming off COVID lists and back from injuries and stuff. And, you know, in that moment, it was just like, like you said, you feel kind of helpless, but at the same time, you have complete trust and belief in your teammates to get the job done, you know, to make sure we extend our season.
Yeah. And again, after last year where you didn't even, you were playing home games in the home of a division rival, I mean, and on the road for as long as you were, and what a horrible year that was, despite your personal success. But so what are you like, is this house money for your team right now? What do you think? Sixth seed, nobody's, you know, you're that team nobody really wants to face. I mean, I had Michael Irvin on earlier, Fred Warner. I had Michael on before, and you know, he's a Dallas Cowboy Hall of Famer, as you know. I said, let's be honest, the Niners are the team you, the last team that you'd wanted to face, right? And he said, yes, he fully admitted that. You know that you're that team, right, Fred? Correct?
Well, I mean, it sounds flattering for sure. You know, I do have a lot of confidence in our team, but I mean, you could say the same thing about, like, let's say the roles were reversed and Cowboys were at the sixth seed and we were at the three seed. You know, who's the last team you want to play at the sixth seed? You know, you don't want to play the Cowboys. Like, they're talented in every single position that on their entire team. Like, you can list literal stars at each position group. So, you know, it's going to be a battle. It's going to be the biggest one of the year, obviously, which, you know, that's what the playoffs are. And it's going to be two dogs just going at it. And I think it's going to be a four quarter football game, back and forth. And we're going to have to play our best game if we want a chance to win.
When you speak to your teammates as a leader, do you think about it? Like, night before, this one, I'm going to tell the guys when I got on the field, or you just let the moment live for the moment, Fred?
Yeah, I think just let you know, just living in the moment, you know. And I think every week's different, every opponent's different. And I think you can't, like, even thinking back to our playoff experience back in 19, I can't really just pull on that experience to try and translate it to this one, because it's much different. You know, like, back then we were the one seed. We had a bye week in the first week, and everything ran through San Francisco, and now we're listed as, you know, quote unquote, the underdogs, and having to go into a powerhouse team in Dallas and try to win a game. So, you know, every situation is different, and you got to take it as it is. And I know Sunday it'll all come together.
All right, don't take what I'm going to ask as an insult. How about that as a setup?
Yeah.
All right. Hardest hitter on the team, Fred Warner. Ooh. Hold on a second. Fred Warner, George Kittle, Deebo Samuel.
Oh, wow. Those are my three options? Nothing
That's
else?
It. Those are the three options, Fred, yeah. Hardest hitter on the San Francisco 49ers, unless you want to give me another one that I'm leaving out.
And I gotta just say myself then, you know, and that's just as cocky as I am.
Okay. did I hear like a little laugh when I said Kittle? Did I hear something like that?
No. Listen, those guys are unbelievable. And in my true answer out of those three, I'd probably actually say Deebo Samuel, which is funny because he's the receiver and you got a linebacker and a tight end. But,
right.
You know, I think back to that play on the sideline, him against Jalen Ramsey, and Jalen gave it all he got, but Deebo is just a different beast. You know, it's going to take more than one to bring him down.
He doesn't do that in practice to you, right, Fred? I mean, like, that doesn't happen, right?
He knows better than that.
I'm wondering, though, do you sometimes watch the film of what Deebo does to others and think for a split second, like, I'm kind of glad that guy's on my team? Like,
I'm glad a lot of those guys are on our team. You kidding me? Like, you look at Trent Williams, for example, and the things that he does to D-linemen and linebackers. I always think back to that clip against Hicks last year in that first game. I'm like, whew, thank goodness he's on my team.
Yeah, I bet. Well, have a great time, man. I can't wait. I will be watching. I can't wait for this game. You obviously know the history of it before you even existed. But it's going to be great. I can't wait for it, and I hope this is the first of many times we chat. Thanks for calling in, Fred. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no doubt, Rich. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. That's Fred Warner of the San Francisco 49ers taking on the Dallas Cowboys. Just talking to him just got me all fired up. Zeke's going to get it. there's going to be a hole, and Fred Warner's going to be on the other side of it, and we're going to see what happens. That's a battle of wills.
Yes, indeed.
Debo Samuel's going to get it. Give me a hole, and waiting for him might just be Micah Parsons.
Will be Micah Parsons.
Well, I mean, not unless he's edge rushing.
You know, Micah, he's all over the field. There ain't no telling where he might be.
You know what I mean? Like, Fred, you know Fred's going to be in the hole.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't know where Micah's going to be placed. That's part of him, too.
Yeah, that's the
right?
The greatness of
right?
it. Yeah.
See where I'm going with this game? This is like, let's go. I think you need to pace yourself because you've got an emotional investment here.
Pace myself for what? I haven't said anything.
For game day. No, I think you're just like holding back is what I'm saying. You can't be like, I'm so confident.
You guys have not in 2 days heard me say anything to that effect.
That's correct.
I'm a little nervous, man.
No, yeah, he's nervous.
I don't like the Niners.
Why can't you just say that? Yeah. You need to confirm to me.
Well, I have to translate. I speak TK.
Prague speaks Steltufa, DJ.
You're fluent in all the rich show languages.
All show languages.
He knows.
You're fluent in me. I know that.
You know, the Niners, traditionally one of my least favorite teams, as you guys know. I don't like the Eagles or the Washington football team or the Giants
or the Niners. So the Niners go back to those 90s days where some of those great memories Irv said. And then, of course, yesterday was, if I'm not mistaken, the 40-year anniversary of the catch.
Correct.
And remember, I did my grab bag on my least favorite sports moments.
That's what
the catch was number one. So, yeah, I'm not going to lie. This Niner-Cowboy game got me shook.
As called on radio by Jack Buck and on TV by Vin Scully, one of the most seminal sports moments ever called by two of the all-time greats, the catch. Get ready for it. You're going to see a lot of that this week.
I see a lot of it all the time anyway.
Well, yesterday is the 40th anniversary, and now the Niners and Cowboys are playing each other in the playoffs. Oh, boy.
Rich, can you believe that Irv, who, you know, I put on the pedestal as one of my favorites, thought I was disrespecting him by putting out the targets?
I mean, that might be the theme of today's show, where everybody says something, they feel like there's some disrespect, and the other people are saying there was no disrespect intended.
Yeah, no, of course not.
That's a theme of this program, is it not?
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show, big week for this man. Wipeout returns to TBS at 9 Eastern tonight, starting on Thursday on HBO Max. The Peacemaker premieres, and we've always enjoyed his character of Peacemaker from the Suicide Squad movie of James Gunn's 2021 movie. And of course, he's just one of the most popular guys around. He's known as the voice of Ferdinand at my house. I'm going to end this long introduction because we only have a limited amount of time with John Cena. How you doing, John?
Rich Eisen, you promotional juggernaut. Thank you very much for the introduction. I appreciate it.
You know what? That may be the nicest thing anybody's ever called me, John. I'll be very honest with you. Promotional juggernaut. That's me.
I like setting your expectations low, sir. How is everything?
I am good. What a big week this is in the life of John Cena, huh?
Very exciting. There's a lot of buzz around the show. Early reviews have been very strong. Audience engagement is good. I am in New York right now. I know you can't see me, and that's kind of like in a meta thing. That's kind of my existence anyway.
Yes.
The full Peacemaker costume as we are running through the final moments to get people to watch this thing on HBO Max.
So I'm just need to ask you this. Does this mean that you still have television? Because, again, you're not on camera here. You still have television appearances for the rest of the day? Or you're just so committed to the role that you're in character off camera right now?
I honestly think a safe answer there is both.
Okay.
And I'm okay with saying that, both.
Okay. You know what? Yeah. That's because you're a professional. You're a lead pipe wielding professional. I think that's what we would like to say.
Or I'm someone who got lucky to slip into the professional ranks, and I really shouldn't be here anyway. So I figured I'm going to go down swinging with the costume on.
So now you lost the lid to Fallon last night? Is that
I did.
Okay, what happened?
He had definite home field advantage, that son of a bitch.
What happened?
I don't even own the helmet, and I lost it. I wanted it. We play all these games. We play these stupid games.
Sure.
Actually, a really cool like football breaking glass one. But we even played a game called Fish Slap, where you just slap somebody in the face with a fish. There's no like if you get the answer wrong, you get slapped. Mm-hmm. You just slap a person in the face with a fish.
Yes.
And he called the game Fish Slap. But there's never any friggin' stakes. Nothing is ever. We don't play for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So to make something competitively interesting, you got to have something on the line. And I foolishly bet the helmet. And he was going to give me a Tonight Show mic, and I said that was garbage. I wanted him to frost his hair tips because he would hate it so much, he would have to get a really short haircut. So
right.
It's going to be a 2-for-1 for me. But like I said, sucker's bet, and he actually knew what game it was, and I had no clue. I went in overconfident. I blame it on the Peacemaker outfit. And I ended up losing the helmet.
Well, I mean, we have, for those who don't know, I think they all do, but at any rate, a shot of the helmet on camera. That looks expensive, John. I'm not going to lie. Does that mean there's a garnished wage of some sort in your next paycheck?
So I was under the impression that I wouldn't be receiving any pay for playing Peacemaker in the first place.
Oh.
I was just happy that I could get out on the field, so they say, and do my thing. No one has ever referred to me as a professional, and I think one of those things is pay. So they may have put that one on my tab, the checks in the mail. Can I say that?
You can. Amen.
Yeah, they just, if they don't get it in a few days, just wait longer.
You're John Cena. You can say whatever you want, man. So, you can say whatever you want. And so, okay. You look like you have a blast playing this role, John.
No, it's fun. It's fun. And I think the fun thing about it is the guy is so flawed. He is so broken and... There's something about characters, especially when you lean into what I would call an 8-hour movie here on HBO Max, as we got 8 episodes of this thing, that you see, and we saw this a bit in The Suicide Squad. He has like a moment. He's just a real bad guy. And his ethos is, I love peace so much, I don't care who I have to kill to get it. Right there, you get an idea that this guy is not wired straight. And I think it's his journey. And people like, because when we announced the show, a lot of the audience members were like, why are you giving this douchebag his own show? He's the least likable character in the Suicide Squad. Why wasn't it Bloodsport or Polka Dot Man or Ratcatcher 2? And I think it's that engagement of like, can this guy be better? Will this guy grow? What journey am I going to go on? And what hilarity am I going to see on the way? And man, hats off to James Gunn and the crew. James wrote a beautiful miniseries, and I'm so glad we had so much fun doing it, and it came out great. And I know anticipation is high for the series, and I really hope everybody enjoys it when they can finally see it on HBO Max.
John Cena here on The Rich Eisen Show. And so I'm looking at the cast, and of all the cast members, one name leaps out at me, Robert Patrick. Want to talk about a badass. You know, he's been here before. He and I both share a love of the University of Michigan together. You got a good Robert Patrick story? I mean, you know, Mr. T2.
I have a good Robert Patrick story. So the very first film I was a part of, when I was just a bright-eyed WWE champion, not knowing which way was up, was a film we did in 2004 or 5 in Australia called The Marine, and the lead villain in The Marine was none other than the Robert Patrick.
Yes.
So he kind of got to, and he played one hell of a part for us. I would have had to be a whole lot better to have sucked in that movie. And he really did the yeoman's work. And it was great, you know, all these years later, you know, almost 20 years later to come back and perform with Robert again. And fittingly enough, he's my dad. He's Augie Smith. And to have such an instrumental role in the series, it was awesome to be able to come back and perform with Robert again. He's one of a kind.
He is one of a kind. He's a total badass. And, you know, I mean, obviously T2, go way back there, and he must have tons of stories. And that must be just neat stuff when the cameras are off and you just shoot it with him.
And it's neat stuff when they're on, too. I can't wait. He says he had the most fun playing Augie Smith, and he's openly told James Gunn that, and I really hope... you know, that he's really, really good at this part, and he takes some really bold, brave swings, and I'm very happy that he brought that sort of energy to set, because I would see only him doing this.
John Cena here on the Rich Eisen Show. I don't mean to get too deep with you, John, but I'm about to.
Let's do it.
Okay, so you play the peacemaker, right? You play peacemaker, and he's a guy who says he's about peace, but clearly, you know, he has conflicts, right?
Yep.
And you play John Cena in Wipeout, where you revel in people face planting and having all sorts of misery. Do you see a theme here, John? You picking something up here?
I see a guy trying to connect the dots to paint a human being in a light where they're one dimensional. I see that.
You see what I mean? I mean, you know,
I see that.
People are just absolutely crushing themselves. You're wondering if they're really hurt. You know, we're hoping that
I never wonder. I know they're okay.
Okay.
That's the show.
Yeah. All right.
They have a blast on the show. We got a bunch of crazy characters on Wipeout. They know what they're signing up for, and we do a great job to give them wipeouts. Rich, that's what we do on Wipeout.
That's true. So if somebody just like runs straight through it and it's no big deal and then they actually show off some actual physical skills, then you don't have a show, right?
And I think that's where Nicole and I are the most surprised, when someone actually does well. Because the course isn't constructed for that. It's not like an American Ninja Warrior thing where you can make your own course at home and practice.
Yes.
It really, and everything is based with water and everything is heavily padded. But it is built for you to spill. It is built for you to be a highlight, epic fail. And people embrace that. And honestly, we've had people just not run the obstacles. You can time out. There's a time limit on each obstacle. And we've had people just pass. So they, you know, they're brave enough to get cast. They bring this crazy personality. And then they just sit there. And we've watched them just sit there. And a lot of times it's in the finals, too. But we watch them just sit there and eventually just pass.
All right, I got John Cena here on the Rich Eisen Show. So you're from Massachusetts, John. Where's your accent? Did you ever have one?
You know, years ago, I went to boarding school at age 15, 16-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the beginning of the end for the Massachusetts accent. Now, if you get me back into the mean street of West Newbury, and, you know, you give me one too many Sam Adams, I may bring it back for a little bit, but maybe I'm saving it. Maybe I'm saving it for another character down the road. But that Mark Wahlberg, Matt Damon, John Cena brothers movie.
Good John Cena. So I mean, so do you have it? Like seriously, can you bust it out? Can you like give me?
It'd be wicked hard.
Okay, there it is.
Yeah,
okay.
It'd be wicked hard to bust it out, but like I said, I need beers.
It's, you know, because again, I'm from Staten Island, New York. If you cut me off in traffic, it comes out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, honestly, with me, I go back to see my family for the holidays, and it takes about 3 days. But on the third day, it was like I was born and raised in East Boston.
I love it. I love it. All right, let's go back to some more roots. I've got my social media grandmaster, TJ Jefferson, here, who's a diehard wrestling fan. I'll give you the floor, TJ, for a question to the great John Cena. Go for
TJ,
it.
TJ, do what you do. Scour the map of misinformation and come up with a question.
Will do.
Yes.
First of all, John, I want to say congratulations on all your success post-wrestling. I mean, I remember watching you in 01 as the prototype doing a car commercial for, I think, La Brea.
That's right, for La Brea Chevrolet.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I remember watching that. And then I remember watching you when you made your debut. I was like, yeah, was that the prototype from the car commercial? So
that was local access car commercials. That's where it all started for me.
Congratulations on everything, brother.
Thank you so much.
I just want to say this. I know you've been busy, so you're probably not paying as much attention to the WWE as you probably once did. But there's a lot of weird stuff going on, man. A lot of weird releases. And I know a lot of fans are kind of like, they're curious, they're worried. Do you have any take on what's going on? And you, as a former top guy there, would it have bothered you to see all of these people that you could be making money with and having great matches with let go?
Well, okay. There's a lot to unpack there. When I started in the WWE, the WWE had just absorbed WCW and ECW.
Mm-hmm.
And the and also had two developmental territories, and the rosters were abundant is probably a good word. So when I started in the WWE, there were releases twice a year, and it created stakes for developmental talent, and it created stakes for talent to try to make a name for themselves, because we just knew. We knew that on a calendar year, shortly after WrestleMania, and either before or after the holidays, there would be cuts. There always were. And that seemed to stop, right around when we really began to redefine ourselves with our new school. I'll say like the Ruthless Aggression era style of characters, me, Brock, Randy, Dave. When those guys began to anchor in and develop the program going forward into the next decade and more, and we started to expand our reach, we started to have more programming, the talent rosters started to get big. And then it became, I think a lot of it, WWE's hiring strategy, I think a lot of it might have, and this is, once again, I'm not thinking for the WWE, this is just me posing a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it might have been a little slightly defensive hiring, because there was and still is a giant boom right now in sports entertainment. People are absorbing this content. They're engaging. People are making a name for themselves outside of the WWE. It's no longer a one-stop shop. So I think with this flux of passionate people who love sports entertainment, people do get a name for themselves outside the WWE. And if the WWE feels maybe that they can be a fit in that world, they're going to try to give that person a shot. They're also really they're really bullish on continuing to hire new talent. So the NXT Performance Center is I don't want to say overwhelmed, but they're at max capacity. So you have all of these performers, and a lot of them, you know, aren't getting a chance to perform. And I think that's the real frustrating thing, both to the WWE and from a stance of a performer. And unfortunately, at the end of the day, it is a business. And I remember when I started in the WWE, I want to use the word fortunate. I was fortunate enough to be at the show in Atlanta where Stone Cold Steve Austin was fired. And that moment right there, it shot through me like a cannon, because I got the impression that if they could fire Stone Cold Steve Austin, unless your name was Vince McMahon, everyone is replaceable. And I think a lot of the frustration from the audience out there is they view sports entertainment like I do. I love watching matches. I love seeing potential in human beings. I love seeing potential in performers. And I see potential in everybody, especially when people begin to define what they would call a gimmick or a personality. I love to be able to try to run with it on conversations and see how far we can take it. But there is only so many spots. There is only so much programming. And I understand from a business standpoint the amount of releases that have had to happen. If the company justifies that, hey, this is the move we're making, we want to carry less talent, it has very little to do with profit loss margin. If the company strategy is to run on a lean roster, it doesn't matter. You run on a lean roster. If the company strategy is to run on a fat roster, I remember when we had stacks of performers and the stock price was at $7. It's just the directive that the company was given to run on a talent heavy roster or a talent lean roster. And I know, obviously this is a touchy subject and it's going to elicit perspective from everyone, and everyone certainly is entitled to their perspective. I think the sad thing here is people who have this gift aren't being allowed to use it, and people are out of a job, and that is the absolute saddest thing, that people no longer can work at a company that they called home for a period of time. I feel for everybody who's had to go in that direction, but all of us, myself included, our journey will eventually have an end. And when you're in it, sometimes you don't have that perspective. But I personally, from my early days in the WWE, always had the perspective that it could be over tomorrow for any and all of us, because if they can fire Steve Austin, there's no way I'm even close to his ability. And that means that they can fire me. But that's just the culture I was brought up in. I was brought up in biannual cuts, and it happened all the time. And I just think WWE went through such a long period of not releasing anybody, and now they're kind of getting back into that rhythm again, that it is a very abrupt shift to somebody who's not familiar with that. And I do, my heart goes out to everybody who has to get that sad news, because it is that's a tough conversation to have.
John Cena, I really appreciate that answer
thank
and the
you,
time
you.
And the conversation, and we end
Rich,
with...
You said you were going to get deep. You were not kidding.
No, well, you know what? I got deep, and then my guy TJ Jefferson got deeper, and I appreciate you going there wherever we took you. And I guess last question for my children, is there more Ferdinand anywhere?
Oh, man, I hope so. I loved doing that.
What a beautiful...
Carlos and...
Beautiful.
I'm really glad that you say you were known as Ferdinand in my house. That's
true.
I was very proud of, so thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely true. Because I also need you to get more Peyton Manning in some,
yeah,
you know,
can,
in some
call
animation.
Him at Rich. Do me a favor. Don't let your kids watch Peacemaker just yet.
Ferdinand's the gateway.
First,
yeah.
And then see if it's okay for them. It won't be okay for them, but that's for you to judge as a parent.
The gateway is Ferdinand Wipeout. Peacemaker. That's the gateway.
Yeah, that's a 20-year timeline. Right.
Take care of yourself, John Cena. Always appreciate it. Take
care. Thank you so much.
You got it. At John Cena on Twitter, Instagram. Check out Peacemaker on HBO Max Thursday. And tonight, the premiere, again, of Wipeout on TBS. How about that answer, TJ?
I mean, I feel like if there was any doubt about me after my Roman Reigns question, I feel like I redeemed myself here.
TJ, I think this is what we call bounce back ability. You've got the bounce back ability.
He really went deep with that answer. It was great.
And you did what a good interviewer should do, which is give him an out prior to asking the question in case he is busy and I think he pays very much attention to what's going on.
Especially from that answer.
You know what I mean? Like, you're like, hey, I don't know if you're focused as much on it, blah, 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 but oh, yeah. What did you think of his answer?
I thought it was a great answer. I mean, look, he kind of looked at it from all sets, from all sides, you know, from the business point of view, this is how they want to run their business, and there's obviously nothing you can do about that, right? But also these people who are getting let go, he also... you know, looked at it from a, now you get a chance to go do what you love to do maybe elsewhere. Whereas if you stayed there, you'd be on the sidelines.
And then fans are upset by the number of releases.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of people getting released, and it's really kind of shocking to a lot of fans, and everyone's kind of wondering, you know, what the deal is. So it's, you know, and also, like I said, from John, who was a top guy, to have all of these people get released, these are people who you could be making money with and creating like classics with. So that's probably what I honestly, goodness, it's what I wanted to ask Roman that day, but I realized he may have been too close to the situation, whereas he might not have been able to fully answer that as openly as John would, because John's not, you know, actively with the company.
Your flop question was then...
I don't think it was a flop necessarily,
Chris,
but, you know,
Chris,
you non-wrestling fans didn't get it. So.
Chris?
Your Roman Reigns question was a disaster.
Oh, and by the way, speaking,
we love you.
Now that we heard that Price is Right lost trombone, right? You, TJ, you beat Michael Irvin in the Dallas Cowboys Guess the Final Record game with the Price is Right win. You were closest.
Without going over.
Yeah. And he went over. You know? So you won in Price is Right and here as well. Congratulations. You get a popcorn machine.
Hey.
And a ping pong table that you say is way too heavy to bring in here.
Yeah, we're going to need some assistance.
Let's take a break. We'll come back, empty the phone banks to wrap up this show. Yeah. Okay, everybody. I was expecting to hear from him today. I saw him on the phone line earlier in hour one. He dropped off, but now he's back, which I'm glad to see. Sideline Mike.
Let's go, Mike.
ATL.
Come on, Mike.
Congratulations, Sideline
Richard?
Mike. Sideline Michael, congratulations.
Thank you, sir. TJ, how about them Cowboys?
Yes, sir.
You Papa Doc'd me last week, Rich. You know that, right?
What did I do?
You Papa Doc'd
me. You Papa Doc'd me last week. Yeah.
What I do?
You know? No, man. You know, you were just talking about what a great season you had. You took all my steam out of it because I was going to say that Hutchinson boy's still on a milk carton somewhere. And the other guy, you know I was wondering, did they make the trip, actually? But, you know, all I'm saying is, brother, we saved y'all from getting embarrassed last night. Now, the last time the Georgia Bulldogs were national champions, gentlemen, I was 19 years old. Oof. I am 59 years old.
Yes, sir.
Today. Hopefully to be 60 in July. So when Stetson Bennett IV got sacked on the second play, running for a first down, and any split just drops the ball.
Yep.
I'm like, you know, you don't know about this Isaac Brothers song. I know TJ knows about it. Hey, TJ, what was in the back of my mind was, here we go again. You know, so I'm like, hey, man. And then he fumbles the ball out of bounds. Now, mind you, I'm at work. I saw the first half, had to go to work the second half, got my son giving me highlights. And then all of a sudden, I'm in the car, and I hear Stetson Bennett IV drops a dime at 50 yards on a free play because an Alabama defensive lineman is offside. And I'm like, maybe we got a chance. Maybe. Just maybe. Now, Mr. Brockman, I understand you got a lot of Georgia gear on over there.
He does.
I'm ready to
and
go,
this
man.
Is what I said on Facebook, gentlemen. This is what I said. I said, I will be as humble in winning as I have been the last 41 years in defeat. Because everybody thought I was just going to be hanging from the chandelier. Because this is what I know, gentlemen. I know Nick Saban does not waste a loss. I know that number 31, who's unblockable the first half of the game,
is
a sophomore. And I know that 90% of the team that we took to the woodshed in the fourth quarter is going to be back next year.
Yep.
And we're going to have about 15 guys going to draft. So all I'm going to say is this. I'm going to enjoy this, but when I tell you Nick Saban is going to make the rest of the league pay for that ass-whooping he took last night, somebody's going to pay. Okay.
Thank
somebody's going to pay.
Sideline Mike, everybody.
Mike, yo.
Thank you.
Congratulations, sir.
After all we've been through, I keep coming
back
to
you.
You
know what's going to come up is this kid Will Anderson, who's so damn good. He's a sophomore. He's so good. People are going to already start talking about if he should just tap out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Micah Parsons didn't play. Look at him. Jamar Chase didn't play. Look at him.
What's the upside from the play next year?
Well, he plays and he gets another year going in the Alabama system. And that's what I'm saying. Like, we've now reached a point where forget about opt out of bowl games. There's going to be conversations about opting out of entire playing seasons because the offensive and defensive rookies of the year in the National Football League who are game changers for both teams, Jamar Chase in Cincinnati and Micah Parsons in Dallas, they did not play football last year. Different circumstances as to why. I'm telling you what's coming too. I think I'm a seer. I see things ahead. You know?
Did you break out the Magic 8-Ball?
I mean, already. Kyrie Irving. Nets win. You know, the Nets had a win at home overtime against, what, San Antonio over the weekend? Got smoked by Milwaukee without him. It's already coming. It's not Kyrie's choice to not take a shot. It's New York's choice to demand that he takes a shot in order to play. And you know, tri-state area people can't do that. Maybe you should move to Pennsylvania. Set up shop in Pennsylvania and then helicopter in, and thus he can get around the COVID rules in New York City. It's a tri-state area resident can't work in a spot like Barclays Center.
So you're saying he should play for the Sixers?
No, I'm saying he should just say, I moved to Pennsylvania.
I'll play every single
home game. Yeah, it's a rule for tri-state area.
So if he literally lived in Pennsylvania, he could play in these games?
I guess. Like, what's the closest to Brooklyn?
Well, J.J. Redick used to live in Brooklyn when he played for the Sixers, so it's pretty close.
I'm just saying.
I mean, it's doable.
I'm just saying.
You can do that. Easy.
But I'm telling you, there are going to be conversations. Should kids who have already put an insane game-changing ability on tape after just a year or two just keep playing?
I'm okay with that.
That's the next step. What a show today. John Cena and Fred Warner and then Eddie George and Michael Irvin and David Bakhtiari. Thanks for taking in Tuesday. We'll take you to Brother from Another on Peacock next.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.